Warning, this is the Freedom Fiends midweek non-radio podcast. Unlike our weekend live talk radio shows, where we adhere to all regulations and community standards, this cast may contain cussing and or prurient subject matter. If you are easily offended, please leave now. But tune in Saturdays and Sundays to our live talk radio show. If you're not easily offended, prepare to be entertained, informed, and enlightened.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com.
I could have spit a V8. Nima, that was so funny, man. Spit a that V8. Was just wrong.
Was it?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I got to turn go there? Up a little bit. Go ahead and talk.
Do you need me to turn myself
no,
up?
No, I might man. Be low. I was doing all sorts of... tests with various people that are going to be subbing for you on your mystical journey into paternity
fatherhood.
Leave. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was working with Ed and Ethan, and I was working with Mike Makes Right. Ed and Ethan just sent me $48 in Bitcoin for an hour of consulting, of telling them what to spend their Bitcoin bounty on. They're going to, you know, like everything that you and I have amassed over like years for the ultimate podcast
they're
gear.
They're going to buy in one fell swoop because of the Bitcoin windfall.
Yes. Nice. Yeah. This reminds me of like, you know, kind of, I have all these friends that are suddenly like, you know, six figure incomes, and I'm going like, yeah, I have $3,000 worth of that at the bottom of the sea. And, you know, the first time I heard about it, it was like, a dollar, maybe $2. And I was like, that's silly. That's actually, I didn't think that was silly. I just, I didn't get in on it, man. And I knew people that made it rich in the .com era. I've had a lot of friends who are millionaires. And, you know, all these friends that are millionaires should send some Bitcoin or some cash to the fiends, because Nima's going to be a daddy, and we'll still do this no matter what. But we're kind of suffering for our art here. We're spreading liberty everywhere and like making nothing on it. And I'm working. Basically, we want to be able to have Nima quit his day job. So everyone should send us money so we can go 7 days a week. And if you go 7 days a week, you can get on more stations too, because weekends are hard for a lot of stations.
Yeah. So we're going to float that. If you like it, give us money, and we'll see what happens.
Yep.
I guess that's how donations work. Yeah,
it is.
You can't really contract it. Otherwise, it'd be a purchase.
Maybe we should like hammer it like Free Talk Live does, or kind of like passive aggressively like make people feel bad like Scott Horton does.
Yeah, he's funny. Yeah. Couldn't pay my rent because it's 6 days late kind of a thing. No.
He said that, or is that a blues song?
I think he said that one. Who's Blue?
Blues. A blues song.
A blues song.
It sounded like a blues song. Couldn't pay my rent. Now it's six days late. I got to get some Bitcoin. I got in too late. The Bitcoin blues.
I like that. Yeah, somebody sample that. Chop that up. Loop that up. That's the Michael Dean blues.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's weird. It's weird to hear rappers rap about not paying their rent, because sometimes they do that too.
And sometimes it's weird. It's like, with rappers, you're either like living incredibly large, or you're slanging on the corner and can't pay your rent to get your baby diaper. Yeah.
Well, there's hood rich, which is can't pay my rent because all my money's spent. And then Nicki Minaj, I think, has a line about it. And MIA has a line that says, same thing. She rhymes money all spent with can't pay my rent. So,
well, I've told you how I knew this chick in Detroit, who she and this dude had this service of one-stop making hip-hop videos for local rappers that were like, for $1,000, they'd come over with a blingy car, like three hoochie chicks in, I think it was like $2,000, three hoochie chicks in bikinis, and like a bunch of cash that you just hold up. Like it was like rent a lifestyle, you know, like they'll come over, they'll make you look rich, they'll film it, they'll make a video for you. And then, you know, you go back to...
Well, Jay-Z used to call people out on that in his songs. He used to rap about how, I actually bought this car. I didn't rent it for my video. He would rap about that.
Yeah.
And that sounds like... Is that what the Rebecca Black guy... That's kind of what he did, but for suburban white girls, right?
I don't know.
Pato?
I don't know what that is.
You know Rebecca Black, the Friday song that was like the worst lyrics in the world. Like,
I don't know what Fridays is.
You haven't heard the Rebecca Black Friday song? I mean, it's like... Oh, man. Play it. Here. Can you?
No.
Okay. Well, everybody knows what it is.
Here, I want to play the worst song ever.
You not knowing what Friday is like me not knowing who Patty Hearst was.
Well, there's a show called Friday. Are you talking about the show Fridays or the song Friday?
No, it was this horrible white girl. She was like 16. Her name was Rebecca Black. She had the song called Friday. And like literally the bridge was, today it is Friday. Yesterday was Thursday. But it had like this great, like not great, but it had decent production quality. Like you could tell they put some work into it, and it turns out the guy who produced is a guy named Pato, who actually raps in it. He's got like an 8-bar rap verse where none of the words rhyme. There's not one rhyme in his whole 8 bars.
That's awesome.
But he's also the producer. Yeah. And the beat's kind of nice, but here's the thing is he would people would go to him, they'd pay him like $2,000 or $3,000, and he'd do like the whole full production. He'd write the song, he'd make the beat, he'd record them singing, and then he'd invite their friends over and rap or
not?
I'm pretty sure he did, because I don't know anybody who would call themselves a rapper would write that. I mean, maybe like one of those people from China who spam our website all the time and we don't, you know, post their comments. It sounded like somebody like that wrote his rap.
Well, man, that's I wish I could just sit around and give audio advice for $48 in Bitcoin per hour, 8 hours a day.
You should.
Yeah.
Hey, there's an idea. All of you libertarians out there who are rich from Bitcoin now and are starting your own radio show, pay Michael to consult.
You really should. I mean, I did great with it. I went back and forth like 20 emails with them. And, you know, they had a list of stuff they wanted. And it was mostly right, but a couple of them were way off. And I'm like, no, you don't want that. You want this instead. And here's why. And here's the article I did on it. And here's photos of it. And here's what you need to do. And here's how you should take calls on the, you know, it was fun. It was fun. I got to do it. So Bitcoin.
Yeah. Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week, man. We're getting added on two. We're on 16 stations. We're getting added on two stations in Florida coming up here in mid-December. We're getting added on a station in Montana, I'm pretty sure. And then there's those four stations in Colorado that have been saying they put us on for 6 months. But, you know, first it was fires, then it was floods, then it was locusts, then it was the tower fell over. I don't know, but you know. See, people think if
pot raids.
People think if you're on the radio, you make money, but no, you have to sell ads. Mm-hmm. And put it this way, if people don't start making more donations, here's my strong arming, my libertarian strong arming. If people don't like, nobody's going to advertise with us who has a normal product, and we can't get like the prepper stuff to advertise with us and the bulletproof vest, because they all advertise with GCN and we can't poach their clients. Mm-hmm. So basically, if we don't start getting donations and selling lots of buttons and really raking it in, we're going to have to start taking ads for like the National Guard and don't drink or drive or you'll get butt raped in jail. Cause that's the kind of people that will advertise anywhere. And I don't want ads for the National Guard on our show.
Although I think your point that we talked about earlier, well, you'd rather them be on this show where then immediately afterward we will explain why you shouldn't join the National Guard.
Yeah.
Then be on a show where afterwards they talk about, oh, it brings a tear to my eye.
Yeah.
All those men serving the state like little slaves.
Yeah. The thing about the National Guard is it's totally an usurpation of the Second Amendment, because it basically,
yes,
you know, if you want to talk about the rules of the state, the Second Amendment says there should be, you know, an unorganized militia of people ready to defend not only against foreign invaders, but domestic. Like basically the Second Amendment means you should have guns so you can fight the federal government. And they set up the Second Amendment, and there's actually politicians who say, the Second Amendment doesn't mean you should have guns. It means there should be a state militia, and that's what the National Guard is, so you don't need your guns anymore.
No, we need a right to bear drones is what we need.
Yeah, to, and deliver pizzas with them. Mm-hmm, so this is really funny. I don't know if you know about this, but when you make a Bitcoin transaction, you can put like a little message in it, like up to a certain number of characters. And somebody figured out the Bitcoin wallet that was seized, the Silk Road wallet that was seized by...
I saw that,
Read some
of the comments on there are great.
Read some of the comments that were put in there.
Okay. Let's see.
It's funny because, like, I want to send you two pages of them. The first page is, like, people begging for money. Like, I'm in a hardship. So they send some money to the FBI and say, please send me some money. But then there's another page, like earlier ones are all libertarian, Obama's a tyrant, blah, blah, blah.
Right. And these are all messages on the wallet that was seized by the feds when they took down the Silk Road, right?
Yep.
Okay, let's see. Now, to post this, do you have to make some kind of dust transaction to it, or what?
Yes.
What is
yeah,
this?
Yeah, look at the transactions. They're all like 0001 Bitcoin, and yeah.
So you're basically putting more money into this Fed wallet?
Yeah. It's like you're paying for your right to like amuse some government goon in a cubicle somewhere, basically.
Yes. Looks like most of the one I'm seeing, when I saw this earlier, like a couple weeks ago, it was all rhetoric being lobbed at the feds about how horrible they were and how the Silk Road will rise again and you'll never stop us. Yeah. The war on drugs is lost by you. But now it's things like, hi, my name is Preet Bharata. I'm a homeless Indian junkie. I'm accepting donations to buy crack for me and my ugly wife. Please help me. Thank you. I think that was a troll one. Yeah,
trolling the FBI. Well, that's another use for Bitcoin, you know?
That's the sole use right there. I heard Peter Schiff argue there's no intrinsic value to Bitcoin. That's the intrinsic value is trolling the FBI.
He said that?
Yeah.
Was that on the Ed and Ethan? Ed and Ethan interviewed him.
No, him and Molyneux, Peter Schiff and Molyneux had a debate.
Had it out.
Good points by both. And no, it was fair. It wasn't like the Peter Joseph debate. It was like each one would throw an argument, the other would throw a counter argument. It was an actual what a debate's supposed to be, and you learn things. It wasn't crybaby bitch fest.
Well, it's two bow tie economists, basically.
Yes. So let me see if I can find some good anti-Fed ones.
The second one I just sent you has some good anti-Fed ones.
Okay.
It's an earlier page. Like, basically, the first ones were just, you know, anarchists and, like, crypto anarchists lobbing rhetoric at the FBI. And then it turned into, like, I am poor Indian junkie with child.
Please need crack for me and my ugly wife.
This one's good. The mythology of government is worshipped by the superstitious. They fear and don't understand real freedom. If I am to be free, I must allow others to be free. Here's one. Obama, your war on drugs is terrorism. If you banned breathing, we'd all be criminals. Prohibition is terrorism. Your war on immigrants is terrorism. Human beings are not illegal because of superstitious imaginary lines on a map. You know,
yay. I also like Obama. Satoshi will make more positive change to the world than you ever promised.
Yeah, so that's the anonymous person who invented this technology.
Yes.
I have a pretty good idea who Satoshi is. I think I know him.
You think you know him? You know the Satoshi.
I think I've interviewed him on the Gumbo. Mm-hmm.
Really? Is it who I think it is?
That narrows it down to about three people. I don't know. Type it to me encrypted. I'll turn down your mic so people can't hear you typing and hear how many letters it is. Go ahead. All right. No.
No?
Not Eric S. Raymond.
Why not?
No.
He's smart enough.
But I don't think it's him.
Okay. That was all I got.
Yeah. So, you know, this is what we call our friend Christian called the Wednesday show the shit piss fuck show, because we let it all hang out. Like, we don't
piss out my ass.
We don't like we don't mince words on concepts on radio, but we try to keep it really, really clean so they can't you know, throw us off. I mean, we keep it cleaner than the FCC requires. Like, Free Talk Live keeps it as clean as the FCC requires.
We try
requires.
Not to say sucks is how far we go.
Yeah. Although
you wouldn't let me say fornicate on the last show.
I was
show.
Like, you'll scare Christians.
You can't say fornication on the air.
Yeah, but this is the shit piss fornication. I'm calling this the shit piss motherfucking anarchist show, because we also try not to say anarchist on the radio. But I was talking to a program director this week who gave me some really good advice. She told me, she's like, yeah, my husband and I listened to your show and, we really liked it. We're going to put you on, but, I think you need to explain a little bit more. Like, when you say a concept that's second nature to you guys, that sounds like Martian to other people, to the average person, you need to explain it. And I was like, really? Like what? And she's like, well, you said Yeah, and Abe Lincoln killed more Americans than Hitler. And then you changed the subject and started talking about Bitcoin, and my husband's head nearly exploded. And I was kind of thinking, like, yeah, I could see that. I mean, so, like, when I've been prepping people that are going to be filling in for you. I've been doing, like, pregame shows with them. I've also got a bunch of them to order Blue Yeti mics, which is a $100 mic that Derek J uses that just plugs and plays in a computer, and that and headphones, right. It's like 90% as good as all this equipment we have. It sounds really good.
Well, because it bills itself as a one-stop solution, whereas in the past you'd have to tell people about the mic they need, and then about the interface or sound card they need to get it to the, then about the mixer they need, then about their channel. But if all you're going to do is plug in a mic and you just want voice or audio into your computer, the Yeti is a good solution.
Yep. So I got, like, you know, of the, like, nine people that are subbing for you while you're gone, like, you know, three of them are already podcasters who have great gear. But of the rest of them, like, four out of six of them are going to go buy a Yeti, which is pretty cool, including Chris Novoselic, who also said, that's cool because I have a rescue turkey named Yeti. And I was like, well, I'm not going to ask you if you're going to eat it this week because I wouldn't want people to ask if I'm going to eat my rescue kitties on Christmas.
Yeah. No, I think by rescue turkey, aren't those turkeys that didn't get slaughtered and then you can raise them as pets?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought he's not going to eat it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he a vegetarian?
I don't know. Is that what you do with your millions when you're a retired rock star? You're like,
buy turkeys to not eat. Yes. Yeah. I'm so rich, I can buy turkeys and not eat them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, he does have, like, many, many, many acres somewhere in Washington. He has a farm or a plot of land, basically. But
also,
Ian MacKay is going to do an interview in January. It's going to be pre-taped because he's busy on weekends. But people have been asking. I've been saying for a long time that I was going to interview him, but I never contacted him. And unlike Henry Rollins, who just never wrote me back and, like, anarchy, I don't want to talk about that. We need Obama. You know, Ian MacKay's like, yeah.
Obama.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, man. I'm totally supporting the government.
Yeah. Well, I know Ian and I kind of consider each other friends from back in the day, whereas Rollins is a guy I met and interviewed once. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we won't get off too much on how lame it is to support a politician, especially when you're a punk musician. But
I will say this: when I was interviewing Rollins at his house or at his office, which is like a house in Hollywood, I was telling him about the song I recorded with Ian MacKay, and he's like, "Really? Ian's been my friend since grade, you know, high school. I thought I had every song he's ever recorded." And I'm like, "Well, we could download it from my website and you'd have it." And he's like, "Excellent. Let's do it." And I showed him how to do it. And he's like, can I click on it? And he's like, he clicked on it because he'd never, and he's like, "That was cool." And he started playing. He's like, "Nice. I've never ever downloaded a song on the internet before."
Whoa. So you taught Henry Rollins how to download music. That's funny.
Yep.
Good job, Michael.
Yep.
That's just the kind of value Michael adds to the world.
Yeah, and occasionally someone pays me $48 an hour in Bitcoin to use the vast, weird collection of knowledge I have.
There you go. Like how to download a song.
Yeah.
So out there. Yeah. What year was that? Was that, like, way before, or was he at that point a native shooting arrows at airplanes?
I don't know. Let's see. That was 19. I was still living in LA, and hadn't met DJ yet. So it was sometime between 2001 and 2005, probably.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He should have known by then, man.
About 2004, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was downloading old Nirvana B-sides from Napster in 1998. So, and I was in ninth grade. So he could have figured it out by then.
Yeah, but, you know, he's a libertarian. He's not. He's a millionaire ex-rock star who sits around, you know, who, if he wants to get something, just buys it. And he's also a vinyl junkie. So, you know, he probably spends as much time on the internet ordering old vinyl from weird record stores than I spend watching porn on the internet. So the NSA is watching people watch porn. You told me about this, didn't you?
Yes.
This morning. Yes, it was the first thing when I woke from my dream lib pair that I go to every night, like I turn on my computer and just like the flood of tyranny comes in. The first thing I saw was Nima sending me this thing that said the NSA is watching people watch porn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's more scary than that because, I mean, I guess we kind of all knew that the NSA was tracking our porn. At least I always assumed. And, you know, it's kind of like with the NSA listening to your phone calls or reading your emails. Everybody, at least in the Liberty Movement or in the alternative media, kind of had an inkling or figured, yeah, that's probably what they're doing. But something like this in the Huffington Post, you know, such a mainstream source with actual proof and documents and language, internal stuff from the Snowden leaks that explicitly shows their tactics for looking at porn and why they wanted to look at porn and whose porn they were looking at. Here's the thing. It wasn't people who were actual terrorists. It's people who, quote, are radicalizing others through incendiary speeches.
Yeah.
So these are kind of the kind of people who would make YouTube videos or go out and give speeches about, you know, why American imperialism is bad. And yeah, okay, granted, a lot of them were Muslim. At least I think maybe all of them in this report were. I'm not saying that that's the only.
The names were redacted. This is from a Snowden dump. This is from the like post him going to Russia Snowden dumps.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And. You know, I think that's important, too, that the names are redacted because people are always crying wolf about Snowden calling him a traitor and they're trying to do the blood on his hands thing like with Manning. But Snowden and Greenwald made sure to release stuff but make sure it doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
So Greenwald goes through it with a fine-tooth comb and makes sure that nobody is being hurt by these reports except for the state itself, which is why it's such a great boon for liberty. And I think people realizing that the NSA is searching people's porn so they can blackmail them with it later is a boon to liberty because everybody looks at porn on the internet and you know, people don't want some goon calling you and saying, hey, do you want me to tell your wife about that dirty tranny crocodile experience you were looking at on the internet?
Yeah. Nobody whereas wants that. You know, I'm a lot safer from blackmail with what porn I look at than some mullah in Saudi Arabia would be, you know, if the NSA released the list of, you know, plump middle-aged lady in a baby doll dress porn that I've been looking at, it wouldn't do any damage because I just said that's what I like to look at. But yeah.
Yeah,
and my
yeah.
wife wouldn't, you know, I mean, I was probably looking at that last night. I showed my wife and she's like, yeah, whatever. And went back to, you know, shopping for shoes or something. or yeah, looked at me and went like, oh, honey. And went back to shopping for shoes.
Like, how cute.
Not even how cute, but just like the only thing, you know, I would openly surf that with her in the room on her computer, with me on my computer. But the only time I would point it out to her is if it's something really bizarre, like, you know, if it's, oh, I don't know, some kind of, you know, middle-aged plump threesome with a couple tranny hookers on crocodile. And then she'd go, oh,
giving
honey.
Giving each other naughty nurses.
Yeah. Oh, honey. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. And the other thing that the HuffPo article, brings light because they actually went and got reactions from some goons on this. And Stuart Baker, a one-time general counselor for the NSA and top Homeland Security official.
Top men.
Yes, one of these top men. He said, he basically said, yeah, this is a good thing, obviously. He said, if people are engaged in trying to recruit folks to kill Americans and we can discredit them, we ought to. On the whole, it's fair and maybe more humane than bombing a target. He described the tactic as, quote, dropping the truth on them.
Ew.
Yes.
Those perverts, man. The NSA are perverts. And that's basically what the head of the FBI used to do, was try to have dirt on everybody, you know. But back then it was everybody famous or like powerful, and now it's just everybody.
Yeah.
What was that guy's name? The guy that they say,
J. Edgar Hoover.
Who never actually wore dresses, but he was gay. He was secretly gay, which was could have been very damaging to him.
Yeah. Well, apparently the HuffPo article saw that parallel, too, and try to bring that up, that, you know, under J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI harassed activists, including Martin Luther King. Like,
think
I think
about
the story-
that, man. Think about, like, that, you know, if anybody thinks, well, the FBI, you know, they have some problems, but they do some good work. They tried to bury they tried to get J. Edgar Hoover to fucking – or they tried to get
Martin Luther King
to fucking kill himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said we have this, you know, he had an affair on the side, and they were like, they sent him an anonymous letter that said, you know, basically, we know about your affair, we're going to expose you, you should just put your pistol in your mouth and pull the trigger.
Right, right. And people who say, oh, well, it's different now. It's not.
It's worse.
Why would it ever be different? Yes, it's so much worse because of the amount of information and the access they have to way more vast amounts of information than they've ever been able to in the history of humanity. They have that at their disposal, and they're still human. You know, they still are as corruptible by that evil power as J. Edgar Hoover and his FBI were, except they have more of it now.
You know what it's going to end up? Here's where I think this ends up if it doesn't just fall apart, or maybe where it ends up before it all falls apart and we return to, like, you know, climbing the kudzu vines on the Sears Tower and pounding corn in what used to be 8-lane highways, like in Fight Club.
Fight Club.
But I think it ends up with they get more and more spy dirt on everybody in the world to the point where it's basically just like, there's dirt on everybody. Nobody's trusted with the security clearance on it. And like what happened in Terminator 2 where the drones just destroy everybody. It's not that. It's more like the computers all have dirt on all the humans. And then the computers start making all this. Yes. Yes.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I haven't heard that yet. We should
I just came up with that.
We have to come up with a name for it though and put it in the glossary.
Okay. Well, there's an open-ended fiend sourcing.
Soviet America porn watches you.
Well, speaking of Soviet America and Berlin Stasi, here's an interesting thing I saw. Oh, before we go to that, I do want to say, speaking of HuffPo, the chick that threatened to rape herself. What's her name that we were talking about
Linker,
last week?
Yeah. Linker something.
Even the HuffPo threw her under. They have an article just damning her. And HuffPo is like, you know, Nancy Pelosi is great and totally leftist. And they threw that leftist bitch under. You know, you can't get away with that in this world, which is a good thing, I think.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Good.
So speaking of the Stasi, it's turning out that Berlin is actually like a bastion of freedom for leakers now. Did you see this?
Are you talking about them, at least Der Spiegel, saying that Germany should grant asylum to Snowden?
Go ahead and read this. Well, there's a couple things. One is some top man in the U.S. government went to some top man or woman in the German government and said, we have reason to believe that Edward Snowden may try to sneak here from Russia. We want you to put in writing that you'll turn him over to us if he does. And the top woman in Germany was like, fuck off. No.
Wow.
There's a lot of like hacker cyber cafes there. It's considered acceptable and good and like honorable to be a leaker there, to be a hacker. Yeah.
So the places that are harboring the free world are now Russia and Germany.
Yes.
As opposed to the United States.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I think
mind-blowing.
They have a recent memory of where this shit ends up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Stalin and Hitler.
Yeah, I mean that's the nut of it. It doesn't matter who's in control of your massive totalitarian police state. It just matters that one's there or one's not.
Yeah, and you know that Germany is where Russia is where that saying comes from that when four meet in a cafe to conspire, three of them are government agents and one of them's a fool. You know, like the Stasi was like. The Stasi and the KGB were like, there were so many of them and there were so many like citizen people, you know, like horizontal enforcement people diming things out to them like, oh, my neighborhood, two pieces of bread. What's going on? To where it was like basically the whole countries were just spying on each other. Berlin at one point had more spies than any other city in the world. And now they're like, we don't want that, especially after it came out that the NSA was spying on phone calls of their president, of their chancellor. What's her name?
Merkel. Angela Merkel.
A Merkel.
She's a Merkelin.
She's a Merkelin.
How mind-blowing is that? Think about the opportunity costs when so many people are spies. What productive work is that? Think about all the wealth being foregone.
I'm just thinking about that by this point, there is at least one person who probably a lot of their full-time job, if not a couple people if part of their full-time job, is analyzing you and me. Think about that. And it's like, you're
how
trying
to just pay that to us as a salary and then we'll talk even more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you'll know more about us.
Yeah.
We'll be on the radio more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. See, that's why central planning doesn't work.
Yeah.
Silly goose. Yeah. Man. Oh, did you read Justin Raimondo's thing about Tyrannosaurus pentagonus?
Yeah, that article was, it was kind of a take on the thing that I've talked about before. And the name of the article was kind of an allusion to the name of our movie, Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. I'm not saying...
Well, I thought that too, but then again, our movie's title was an allusion to The Road to Serfdom by Hayek.
Right, right. Yeah, but so. It was something, The Road to Something. The Road to Serfdom is just The Road to Serfdom. You know, I'm not saying that Justin Raimondo owes us 0.01 Bitcoin, but if he wants to send us one.
He wants to give it. No, he's too busy pimping his drive for antiwar.com.
Yeah.
Which,
good for him. Good for him. Good for him.
Yeah.
So what's the name of this article?
It's called Tyrannosaurus Pentagonus, The Road to Extinction.
Yeah.
And it's sort of his take on the Reuters report that came out, was it like a week or two ago, that basically shows that what the Pentagon does is just sort of make up numbers every month
they
or
have
so.
Lists
too.
Of lists. And their rooms have rooms. And they probably their have a Starbucks have inside another Starbucks in the Pentagon.
Yes, yes. And they have a budget office inside a budget office. And,
and then the black budget office that no one knows about in the budget office.
Right, right. Yeah, and nobody knows where any of this money is going, coming or going. They don't know what's being bought. They don't know if there are people – I mean, obviously there are people who are just getting money and not actually providing the services. There can be no audit. Like apparently there's been audits attempted and the Pentagon fails to actually get the audit done because it's too big of a behemoth of – you know, it's the warehouse at the end of Raiders and nobody has an inventory.
No.
Of it.
No, the warehouse at the end of Raiders is just the list of rooms and projects of the Pentagon.
That's it. Right. It's right. Just and there's no just, list of where those lists
right,
are.
Right. Yeah. I mean, every once in a while you hear some story of like some faction of the U.S. government lost $700 billion in cash, or sometimes in cash, sometimes not, but doesn't know where some money in a budget went. There was one, though, where it was like, they were taking like billions of dollars in U.S. paper money to like Baghdad to like rebuild it. And I'm like, wait, what? Why do you, huh? What? And then it disappeared. Yeah, like no one could find it.
It was like $6.6 billion missing in Iraq. CBS News reported that it might have been stolen. How does that amount of money get stolen? Like, is that a truck? Is this like a rap video truck full of money?
I don't understand. It's probably a transport plane driven by like three Marines. I can just hear the conversation, like, you know, from when they leave Edwards Air Force Base to when they don't show up at the embassy airport in Baghdad and they somehow end up in Russia or Cuba, you know? Like, well, you know, I mean, we don't get paid much. Come on, man, be a good American. And like, you know, it's like an 18-hour plane ride. And like by the time they get near Iraq, they're just headed towards Berlin, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. And if that was the tactic, you know, a lot of the tactic of COIN, you know, the counterinsurgency strategy was for them to just pay off a bunch of people. And if that was your military tactic, why didn't you just start with it? I mean, why didn't you just give Saddam straight up billions of dollars to step down and then you have your regime change and save the lives of a million people?
Yeah. Or maybe it was like they were starting the new Iraqi economy with U.S. money, like, and you get $1,000 cash and you get $1,000 cash.
Like it was their 40 acres. It was their mule.
Yeah, it's like, well, Alaska has that. Like everyone in Alaska gets $1,000 a year from the government for oil income or something.
I think it's because it points to the fact that a lot of these Middle Eastern wars, if they're not – I mean, wars are always about more than one thing. But I think in addition to it being what Israel wanted, it's also a factor of this is what the arms industry wants. You know, I like the way Scott Horton says the whole thing was just a commercial for Raytheon and Lockheed. It's a promotional video. That's what shock and awe was. And, you know, see, these are the great things you can keep buying. These are the great things that people in your district, Mr. Congressman, are making for us.
Well, let's go to the market and then come back and talk about how Fox News is owned by a Saudi prince.
Sounds good to me. Stick with us.
this is Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends. Using government-printed funny money fuels and encourages wars abroad, and the wars at home against you and all you hold dear. Why should you remain beholden to self-appointed federal kings who don't care if you starve in a cage? Become your own king today by owning gold and silver from Midas Resources. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Midas Resources banner over on the right, or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed,
Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, fights to protect your rights in the digital world. When a patent troll threatened podcasters, they fought back. EFF has also defended your right to encryption and has sued the NSA to end the government's mass, suspicionless surveillance. There are different ways you can help EFF, from donations, to signing petitions, to writing your representatives, to just spreading the word. Find out more at EFF.org. That's EFF.org.
Do you want to raise your children outside of the government indoctrination camps that are today's public schools? Check out the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right of freedomfiends.com. The Ron Paul Curriculum is a liberty-based K-12 homeschool course. It covers history, liberty, geography, math, science, and free market economics. Kindergarten through fifth grade are free. Then it's only $250 per family per year. Click on the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Yeah. You know, we didn't mention yet that Bitcoin hit $1,000 for the first time today per Bitcoin. And, and good for Bitcoin. The Fiends bought $100. We didn't really have it to spend, but we bought $100 worth of Litecoin last week. Yes. And we do take Litecoin donations as well as Bitcoin and cash. And the Litecoin has tripled in a week, man.
Yeah, that's nice. I like that.
Yeah. I asked DJ if we could last week. I said, can we take our retirement savings and sink it into Litecoin? And she's like, absolutely not. And she still stands by that, and I stand by that too. And we don't really have much, but you know, we could have moved some things around and like starved and probably come up with $2,000 if we had to and spent it on Litecoin and sold it today for $6,000.
Yeah, I would never put everything I have in one thing ever.
That's
always a bad idea. Don't put all your eggs in one bet, man. Don't just place one bet on the roulette table and call it a night.
Yeah.
But yeah, you sent me this thing from Think Progress, who all the people who are against Meg Lanker say she writes for them or blogged for them, but I searched her in Think Progress and I don't come up with
that. I think they scrubbed her because she won an award from Think Progress. She literally won an award from there. I think that they scrubbed her from it. And I do want to mention that I said last week in passing, I called someone a right-wing Zionist. And one person like called me on that. And that's something I should explain if I'm going to use it. And I don't want to like point out.
Who called you on it? I hadn't heard about the call.
Some guy. It was a guy. It was a listener. But they just said like, you know, you should probably explain that because skinheads call people that, like it's a bad thing too.
That's very true.
Although they wouldn't say right wing because they are kind of right wing. But basically, like I wasn't saying it. The thing is, okay, Zionism or Judaism, like they both encompass three different things, like a direct lineage, you know, an ethnicity and a nationality and a religion. So it's like it's hard to say something about one facet of that without the other. And I was just basically saying that guy David Horowitz is totally pro-Israel and wants Israel to rule the world. Like he's written an article called Why Israel is the Victim, you know, which is hilarious. Yeah. But it's not inaccurate to call him a Zionist. He actually won an award, and he has his speech up on his website, his acceptance speech, where he went in person to win the – he won the Journalist of the Year Award from the Zionism Institute of – a Zionist Association of America. So it's not inaccurate to have called that guy a Zionist.
No. It's a title he wears with pride. But – when you say that in a critical manner, you're not saying you're criticizing a Jewish person's right to move to a specific geographical area and live there. Because you, it's not like they're illegal immigrants in the land of Palestine. You're not saying that. You're being critical of the Israeli state.
Yeah. I'm critical of all states, but especially Israel because they have so much control over the U.S. military policy. I mean, there's a joke, there's a meme I've seen that's like a soldier and it says like, join the U.S. Army and go fight for Israel. I mean, that's kind of what it is. Mm-hmm. Think about everybody that the U.S. is fighting. It's all, you know, Muslims and Arabs that Israel doesn't like.
Yeah. Why do you think they're crying such big crocodile tears about the Iranian peace deal or the interim nuke deal? Is because they wanted us to go kill a bunch of Persians. They don't want us to make peace.
Don't search.
Peace is not on their mind.
Don't search interim on Google Images with the porn filter off. Also, don't search top men. Don't search top men on Google Images with the porn filter off.
I'm gonna search top men interim agreement and see what the NSA thinks about that.
So Fox News is largely owned by a 7% stake in News Corp is owned by a Saudi prince. I'm going to let you pronounce this one. His middle name is Bin. I just sent it to you.
Oh, that's still a tough one. I don't speak Arabic. I struggle through Farsi. I would call it Al Walid bin Talal.
Yeah,
that's how I would pronounce it. And that I don't have an Arabic accent either, so I don't know if that's how it says how it sounds or how it should sound. But this dude, Saudi Prince Al Walid bin Talal, owns a 7% stake in News Corp, the parent company of Fox News, making him the largest shareholder outside of the family of News Corp CEO Rupert Murdoch. I keep calling it Corp like it's the Marine Corps. No, News Corp CEO Rupert Murdoch.
I like News Corp. That's what it is.
That's kind of what they are. Yeah,
this guy is literally a member of the Saudi royal family. Who, you know, there's conspiracy theories that are probably true. That like, well, they were good friends with George Bush, but that they have pushed U.S. military policy. And wasn't there something in that movie Fahrenheit 9/11, a whole thing about, you know, it's not.
There was a thing in that Michael Moore movie about. Every Bin Laden family member who was in the U.S. Being allowed to fly, even though there was a hold on all other flights. And I didn't fact check it, but that's what Michael Moore said.
It's probably true.
9/11.
Yeah. It's not true. The other conspiracy is not true that a bunch of Jewish people were told not to come into work that day. But it is true that the Arabs got to run away. Run away.
Yeah.
Because Bush let them.
Now, the thing is, Saudi, at least the Saudi government and the Saudi royal family, which includes Saudi princes like Al-Walid bin Talal, they're not enemies of the U.S. government. They're besties, man, complete besties. And they're not enemies of Israel either. I mean, the two biggest allies, the two most influential powers on American foreign policy, especially with regard to Middle Eastern affairs, is the Saudi Arabians and the Israelis. And that's why they're both so anti the Iran peace deal, and they're both they were the biggest proponents of bombing Syria.
Fox News is very pro-Israel, but it's very like neutral to the point of absent about Saudi mentions of Saudi Arabia.
I think so.
You and I were talking about this the other day. Like, they have all sorts of pundits on there as guests all day long, every day, bashing various Islamic Islamic Muslim country. Everything in the Middle East that ain't America or American or Israeli, like they just bash it all day long, but they don't, they never mention Saudi Arabia, almost never. And it's the biggest,
because they can get away with it because people have never seen a map. They don't know where Israel is. They don't even know a Saudi Arabia exists unless, you know, you've told them, you know, they don't think of that in their head. I think a lot of people that, Saudi Arabia is also in the Middle East and is also a player and they're our friends and they're this giant, powerful country who gets to have a lot of influence on what the American military is doing.
Every Muslim in the world gets down, you know, every devout Muslim in the world gets down on his knees several times a day and faces Saudi Arabia.
That's true.
That's where Mecca is. It's in Saudi Arabia. Yep. And it's the richest country. It's not the most populous country in the Middle East. What did you say is? Egypt?
Oh, Egypt is. Yeah. I didn't understand what you're saying.
One of these countries, which country did I say outlawed public protests this week? Was it Saudi Arabia or Egypt?
You told me it was Egypt, and I thought, how are they going to do that? Just kill everybody? And I thought, maybe they will.
I guess we'll see. I think it's been outlawed in Saudi Arabia for a long time. I don't think you could get away with that in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, they didn't have Arab Spring protests that anybody talked about, did they? I mean, the whole Middle East, at least a big portion of it, was having some type of Arab Spring showing. But
the Saudi royal family probably just
dare that.
Probably just gave everybody like $10 to go home.
They did. Yeah, I think there were reports of that, of them opening the spigot on a lot more welfare payments, not only to their own people, but I think in some of the Emirates and outlying countries sort of in the Gulf.
Now, when you say welfare, they don't have welfare checks there, but they have public services, right?
I don't know. I mean, they have funds that they disperse to the people. I would assume it would be, if not similar to the way welfare works here, then even more prolific. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if everybody got some kind of dividend check like you do when you live in Alaska. But I don't know.
Speaking of dividend checks, this Saudi prince, member of the royal family who owns 7% of Fox News, immediately after the September 11th attacks in 2001, Al-Walid gave a check of $10 million to New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani. He publicized
9/11.
He publicized in a written statement upon this donation, "At times like these, we must address some of the issues that led to such a criminal attack. I believe the government of the United States and America should re-examine policies in the Middle East and adopt a more balanced stance toward the Palestinian cause. As a result of this statement, Giuliani returned the check." Wow, there's so many weird angles in that, man.
Yeah, I guess there is.
Well, you know, it's weird that he gave it to Giuliani too, and not to like some fund for 9/11. Like, that's how you do business in the Middle East. You give the money to the top man, you know.
Well, see, this is why Saudi Arabia is an interesting case too, is because for their own internal politics, they have to give some kind of lip service to the Palestinian cause, because there's so many people in there. I mean, the 9/11 attackers, who were predominantly Saudi and Egyptian, cited, you know, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict as a big motivating factor. So I think if you are part of the Saudi royal family, you know what your people want. You're not going to give it to them, but you might pay some lip service and try to dump off a $10 million check to Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah. That guy giving 10.
You know who's really good on this is Will Coley, both with the knowledge and the history of Saudi Arabia. And he basically says that, you know, Saudi Arabia is not some kind of example of an Islamic leadership. No, they're an example of an usurper state bastardizing and using Islam to rule over people in a tyrannical way.
I wonder if he'll ever be able to. Has he ever gone to Mecca? Because I wonder if making statements like that, if he'd be barred from it.
That's a really interesting question. I doubt
they probably vet. I would imagine Saudi Arabia and America probably really heavily vet every American that goes, you know, every born in America American who goes to Mecca.
Right. Which is not just a vacation thing like people from Bible camps going to Israel to see the sites there. It's actually a pillar of their religion. It's one of the five pillars
like
of Islam.
Like you basically have to do it if there's not anything banning. If you have the means. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if in Islamic heaven, the government not letting you in counts as an excuse to not make your Hajj.
Yeah. And I know that the American, who are the bow tie black Muslims in America? The
Nation of Islam.
Yeah. They're very controversial to a lot of people and including to a lot of traditional Muslims because they kind of rewrite some of the rules. And one of them is they remove that one basically to an extent just because most poor black Americans can't get the money to go there.
Yeah.
Or they have weapons charges and, you know, because America loves to.
And America won't give. They can't get travel documents.
Mm-hmm.
How horrible is that? That you have to get some kind of government permission to go fulfill one of the peaceful rites of your faith. I mean, I could see if it was some kind of rite of your faith that you had to like slaughter a newborn baby or something. Then, yeah, obviously somebody should prevent you from doing it. But a peaceful rite like traveling to somewhere and praying to a certain place. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, shouldn't that make people's blood boil that any government would prevent somebody from doing something like that? That's part of their core belief system.
I'm searching visit Mecca online.
Oh, I bet there's a Google Earth now.
Well, no, probably not. I wonder if you can just take the pilgrimage online. Probably not. But
from what I understand, they're pretty restrictive about who gets let in. And
did you see one of those comments to the FBI in the blockchain on those dust payments to the seized Silk Road account? One of them was something like, "Hey, please send me as many Bitcoin as you can. I need Bitcoin to power my time machine to travel to somewhere where there's not people like you."
Nice. I didn't see that one. It would be a fun evening one night to sit down and read all these, but I don't think we have time for that right
now.
Yeah.
I don't think you can visit Mecca if you're not a Muslim.
Not a Muslim? Yeah. I think that's right. And people might say, "Oh, that's horrible. How intolerant." But I don't think you can get into the inner temple of a Mormon temple without being a Mormon either. And a good Mormon, like you have to like apply for it and go to classes and do all sorts of things.
Yeah. And speaking of weird things that would be tolerated with some people that aren't with others, in Israel, like basically they have a racial component of where, you know, like Hitler was horrible and he killed people who were Jewish. But Israel basically will like grant you citizenship if you're Jewish. You know, you can just go there and live.
Ah, that's a really good point. Yeah. People say Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, and that's why they're our special friends. And that's such a sleight of hand and a misdirect, because Israel's not really a democracy so much as they're a religious state. You know, you have to be part of their clique to participate in Palestine. Can Palestinian Muslims vote in an Israeli election?
Probably not. No.
They
also will fine parents for not circumcising their kids. Like fine them like $150 a day until they do it. Yeah.
Yikes. I didn't know that. No. Yeah. That's mind blowing. Yeah.
You know, my daughter was Jewish, which is it's kind of weird how she found out because I'm assuming it was from her mother because her mother was adopted and didn't know her lineage. And my dad is really big on looking up genealogy. And although he's such an East Coast wasp that if he found a, you know, Jew in his woodpile, he probably would just forget and not mention it or something.
Jew in his woodpile. You sound like Borat. There's the Jew in my woodpile.
Throw the Jew down the well.
It came out with its horn and its claws.
Yeah. But my daughter found out from a DNA serotyping, I don't know what it's called, but a test when she was looking for a bone marrow, you know, before she died, when she was getting cancer treatment, she was getting a bone marrow donor transplant. It was kind of weird at one point, like I was not an option for it. Like, parents aren't a good option, but siblings are. And she actually asked me, it was really hard for her to ask me. She was like, "Do you know if you have any kids you might not know about?" And I was like, "No, I don't." But but she got DNA testing to find out if she was, you know, like what kind of – who would be a donor for her from the donor pool. And she found out she had Ashkenazi Jew. Is that how you say it? Ashkenazi.
I guess.
Ashkenazi Jew, which is the
– I'm not good with Hebrew
ethnic
either.
Jew as opposed to the regional or, you know, religious Jew. Or it's one of the ethnicities. But, yeah, she found that out from that. And I'm thinking, like, isn't that weird that there's a blood test for being Jewish? Like, boy, it's sure good that Hitler didn't have that.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really scary how I feel like more than anybody – And I guess this is what power and the state does to people, is it corrupts them. But more than anybody, as a culture, and a lot of people do, you know, a lot of the biggest critics of the Israeli state and Benjamin Netanyahu are American Jews who tend to be liberal in their foreign policy prescriptions. So they're some of the biggest critics. So I don't think it's whole of Jewry, as some people would say.
Jewry.
But how do you become the head of a Jewish state and then espouse some of the horrible treatment of human beings that sort of justified having a Jewish homeland in the first place? One of the things, it's a rumor, but I'd believe it, is that the Israeli military machine was developing weapons of mass destruction. They were biological weapons that could target based on genes. So if you did pass that Jewish blood test, you might not get sick and die. But if you were one of those undermention or whatever you'd call it, one of those brown Gazans, you might get sick and throw your guts out.
Wait, who developed a smart bomb?
They didn't.
What? Someone was talking about this?
They didn't develop it, but
who?
The Jews. Not the Jews. No, I shouldn't say that.
The Israeli government. When was this? Mm-hmm.
It was a rumor. I started with a rumor. I came across it actually in I was in a cross-examination debate team in high school, and our topic was weapons of mass destruction, and this was actually one of the subtopics. Let's Google it. Let's see.
Man.
I should bring more evidence when I make a statement like that. I thought I brought that up on the cast before.
I mean, that sounds like the modern version, like the modern opposite version of what's that horrible book to discredit the Jews that was written in turn of the century, last century?
I know what you're talking about,
yeah.
But I'm busy researching this. Let's see. Does Israel have smart germs? So it's at least a rumor. I was right about it being a rumor. I don't know if it's true.
Well, that could be.
And it's written by Eric Margolies, who's a pretty trustworthy guy. Let's see. Israel
Sounds
is
Jewish
developing
too.
A biological... Eric Margolies? No, I don't know if he is Jewish, but he wrote The American Raj. Scott Horton interviews him all the time. He writes on Lou Rockwell. He travels across the Middle East. Like, he was in Gaddafi's home talking to him, like, after it was bombed by the Americans and his daughter died. He gained access to interview Muammar Gaddafi. But
Margolies is a surname that, like its variant shown below, is derived from the Ashkenazi Hebrew pronunciation of the Hebrew word meaning pearl, and may refer to – okay, go on.
Yeah, there you go. So this is from 1998, so this is an old thing. But Margolies says, Israel is developing a biological, quote, ethnic bomb that kills Arabs but leaves Jews unharmed. So claimed the respected London Sunday Times on 15th November, citing Israeli military and Western intelligence sources. I'm wondering if he goes on to debunk this, though, because that's kind of the feeling I get from the so claimed. I guess we don't have time to go through this right now because it'd be exhausting.
Nah, I want to. I want to. But go ahead.
Well, it's just the fact that people would believe that, or that could at least be brought up in this, is kind of what I was getting at.
Well,
that
I think germs could be targeted to various groups because there are certain diseases that certain groups get more than other groups.
Right. That was my point, though, is that this is something that people would tend to believe, that if the Israeli state, and I must emphasize the Israeli states, not the Israeli people and not the Jews, but if the Israeli state did develop something like this, I don't think people would be super shocked. They'd be like, okay, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing they're into, man.
Do you think I would get droned if I started a Kickstarter campaign to hire a prominent DNA scientist to help me develop a germ that only incapacitates statists? It just makes it so they can't move.
We would have to figure out if there is a statist gene or not.
I think
Molyneux would argue with you.
To say there is, but it sounds like dehumanizing people. It's part of my theory of, like, you know, people that defend the state like their mother are, you know, a subspecies. Homo parasitis. Homo sapiens parasitis.
It's a really dangerous concept. I think it's fun to joke about, like we do.
libertarian eugenics.com. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just awful.
It is awful.
I mean, this is what the Mongol hordes thought, that all the people who lived in houses and were sedentary were like herd animals, and so they didn't mind murdering them by the millions. I mean, the Hitler and his Nazis believed that the lessers could be rounded up and gassed because they were some different species. So I don't really like to talk in terms. I like to think that everybody's born adaptable and with a clean slate, and it's how they're raised.
So basically, you're saying that you want to start a Kickstarter campaign for libertarian reindoctrination camps that will herd those people into, because they can be changed. If you lock them in a room and play LRN to them for 72 days straight, while bright lights flash on as soon as they fall asleep, and
I think maybe there's a barrier. Maybe once you've crossed the Rubicon into statism, some people are unsavable.
I'm kidding, I'm kidding. I don't want to force anyone to do anything. Right, I just want everyone to give us money so we can do this 7 days a week. I mean, think about if somebody said, who was it? Somebody was giving us at one point $1 for every hour they listened to. I think that'd be a good suggestion. I think if half the people who have ever listened to us, I mean, I think if everybody who ever listened to us right now gave us 10 cents for every hour they'd ever listened to us, you could just quit your day job.
Yeah.
But most people are just stealing.
People ask for that all the time.
If you listen to one more minute of the Freedom Fiends without making a donation, you're stealing.
No,
I'm kidding, man.
We're the street performer. I know you are. We gotta sit there and play our saxophone.
No, I think we should be like the Bill street Clinton. Performer that, like, if you put a nickel in his hat, he chases you down the street screaming at you until you just throw a dollar while you run away.
Okay, that'll be your job.
Minister of propaganda.
Yeah, I'm just like,
yeah. All right.
Can't be bothered to chase down the crackheads. All right, take a break.
Yeah, mark it.
Yeah.
Worms.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Federal Reserve notes only have value because of a collective hallucination, whereas gold and silver are real, and so is their value. Gold and silver predate government-printed funny money, and they will undoubtedly outlive government-printed funny money. Get some gold and silver into your hands from Midas Resources by going to freedomfiends.com right now and clicking on the Midas Resources banner over on the right. Or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squigelps from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Roland, so Nemo, yeah. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving. You're going to eat some dead birds?
Yeah, I guess I am. My wife's going to eat some dead vegetables. Some cool. Field roast, as they call it.
Some tofu duckin'.
Field roast, that's the specific brand. But yeah, it's like tofurkey.
I was watching MSNBC today for a minute and flipping between that and Fox News and just going like, idiots, this market share is rightfully ours. I mean, both channels were just like Thanksgiving bullshit that just made no, like, you know, in on the New York one, they were showing last year's Thanksgiving's Macy Day parade. And I'm just like, what does that have to do with anything? And then they were like discussing whether it's going to happen this year. And then I flipped to MSNBC and there was like some mousy, effeminate East Coast liberal pundit male going like, well, Walmart really needs to give more to their employees because they have to give back because they make so much money and there are so many people without in these times of want and the Thanksgiving, every family needs their Thanksgiving turkey. And then I switched back to Macy's and then they were doing like the salute to the troops on Fox News Corps. And then I switched back to MSNBC and they were showing like a clip of David Letterman saying like, yes, get Butterball brand dead birds for your dead bird day. And like, I'm not that insulted by that, but it's kind of like, pick a message, MSNBC. Like, either Thanksgiving is this glorious thing that Walmart needs to be forced to bring to the poor people, or don't make fun of it and say, like, yeah, you're just all eating bird carcasses. It's like, what? It's the war on Thanksgiving, I'm telling you, Nemo. And our pilgrim fathers came over here and tricked those noble Native Americans into feeding them when they were starving. And then the next year came back and murdered them. And that's what we're celebrating. I heard this talk show host the other day was like,
yeah, they had smart germs back then, too. They were called smallpox blankets.
Yep. Yeah, I heard this thing the other day before, like, I was listening to one of our shows on some other channel in some other state, you know, playing on the radio on their stream. You're vaping loud. And and it was like, it was some show where it's like, man, I wish Ben Stone could just interrupt this show. As they were interviewing some guy. I was like, yes, and my Christian heart swells with pride when I think of the pilgrims and how God mandated that there was this wonderful book called the Bible that was this guide for living, and Europe didn't want this book and was just rejecting this truth being handed to all mankind. So God said, I've made another continent for you. Go to North America and this book. And I'm like, I have nothing against the Bible. You know, I just have something against this manifest destiny, bullshit, top men, great men. Anybody who thinks that the Pilgrims were noble should go listen to Ben Stone's take on it.
Yeah, yeah. He recently did that interview with the radio station up in Alaska, and he really nailed it there. And I love it when Ben Stone gets all historical on him. But yeah, the Puritans, which I guess is who the Pilgrims were, right? They were Puritans.
Yeah.
They thought that it was basically a rehashing of divine right. You know, they thought they were there at the behest of God to spread these beliefs by force if necessary. And they just weren't getting a good stronghold in England with it. So they decided to try somewhere else.
You know what that is? That is the predecessor to American exceptionalism.
Oh, completely.
To the idea of America number one. The thing that like most Americans don't realize, every country in the world has their version of that. Every citizen in every country in the world throughout history, in their public school, in their church, in their parades, in their daily life, is taught from a very young age that their country is the best and they should have pride in it. You know, it goes back to, I was listening to one of our old episodes today and we were talking about that. I'll rehash this real quick, is that History of the World, Mel Brooks movie where the caveman, the guy's talking about back in the caveman days, like, and every cave had their own national anthem. I remember ours. Let them all go to hell except cave 79. Yeah, and that's pretty much every national anthem ever. And every, you know, Albanian exceptionalism, I'm sure, is a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's also one of the most dangerous things, especially when people have immense military power behind an idea like exceptionalism. Like the Mongol hordes, they thought they wrote a letter to the Pope saying that if us massacring all of you Christians wasn't God's will, then why did we do it? That's the reality. God's will is manifest, yeah, man.
Top Mongol men.
Yeah. When you start thinking like that, that God has anointed us to be the bringers of his wrath or his will, or we're some way better than you because we're exceptional. That's the kind of thinking that leads to massacres and holocausts and tyranny.
Yeah, and that's what we're up against, not just in The Fiends, not just on radio, but in general. And there's this,
yeah,
I am seeing a lot more lately of people who call themselves libertarian of one flavor or another who are patriots. And it's they contradict each other. You can't be both. And it's what it is a lot of people who are patriots. I think it's people who are patriots embracing some bit of libertarianism because they realize the government isn't going to do what they thought it would. But they're
trying to be stylish, and it's a buzzword
that too.
Now.
It's that too. But no, but I've seen people who are like, you know, patriot libertarians who retweet things that are libertarian, you know. But then they also retweet, like, you know, on this Thanksgiving, remember your founding fathers and the Pilgrims who before them. And man.
Ugh. Yeah. I saw a guy who's on my Facebook, and yeah, sometimes he'll post things about how awful Obama is and get the feds out of my life. But then he'll also post things of a picture of a passenger plane, and below it is like a shipping crate tied to a rope, and it says Muslims, and it says, this is how Muslims should fly.
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Some people just don't get it. You got to separate the bigotry from the morality, man. I mean, universalize the principles. How's that? If you don't want the feds messing with your life, then don't accept it. Don't accept the aggression, you know, NAP 2.0. Don't accept it when the state infringes on somebody else's life either.
Yeah, basically what that guy's saying is, you know, liberty for all except Muslims.
Right. Right.
And I'm not being blind, and I'm not saying people don't do bad things, but the free market could deal with all of that better. And to clarify, if there's anybody listening to us for the first time today, you know, we're going to start doing that more in radio, like explaining things instead of just saying, yeah, patriotism is poison, and going on to the next thing. Because first of all, that'll get us kicked off radio stations. Secondly, it'll make people turn the dial without internalizing it. We can't. Here's the qualm I'm having is like trying to be true to and helpful to our longtime listeners and still be entertaining to them without boring them to tears when we explain new concepts for the new listeners. And I hate to say it because this sounds like throwing people under the bus, but it's not. The new listener who's never encountered Liberty before is far more important than the guy who is listening to every episode from the first show. Because the guy who's listening to every episode for the new for the first show gets it. And literally, like, he's ready to go start his own show, man. And I'll tell him how, and I'll tell him what mics to buy for free. Or he could go to creamyradioaudio.com, and it's already all up there anyway. So that person doesn't need us because he needs to go out and spread it. He should still listen to us if he likes to. But it's like, this is a teaching hospital. And when you graduate from school, you don't have to stick around forever and lurk in the halls. And I'm kidding. I'm not saying like old listeners are bad, but I'm saying like the new listeners are much more important because we are here to spread a message. We're not here to hear ourselves talk. We're not here to entertain, although we like hearing ourselves talk. And that's one of the reasons we do it, even though we're practically losing money doing it.
I think entertainment is a big aspect of it, though. I think that's why we try to be lively, animated, and have a sense of humor about things. And I think that that can tend to help keep the older listeners around. And I think that that's part of the strategy, too. And I think the other thing is we're cheerleaders for the memes and the ideas and what's current in the Liberty mission or the Liberty movement or whatever you want to call it. So I think the goal is to be something for it, you know, everyone, for or at least for the new listener and for the tried and true fiend.
I mean, really, my goal is for us to not be needed anymore. And that means it's LibPair. And I think the way we get there is from planting seeds, people growing the seeds and then going out and starting their own thing. Like, literally, I don't want us to go away. I want us to help in some small way to bring about LibPair. And then when I'm 90 and you're 70, I want this to just morph into a show about kitty cats and audio gear. I don't want to have to be complaining about the government. It hurts my heart, man. It's hard. Yeah. It really is. So with that whole preface, explain what we mean to the new listener of why, oh man, patriotism and libertarianism, why patriotism is a detriment to reaching true liberty. Like, we're not being anti-American. We're not being, you know, punks. We're not being unfaithful to people we like. But tell what we mean by that.
Well, here's my take on it is patriotism. I guess you have to define some terms. And for our purposes here, at least in the critical sense of being critical of patriotism, I'm going to define it as loyalty to a nation, to a group of people, and to its institutions. And now this is different from being loyal to an idea, which I think is just called
or your
being,
family or your loved ones or something you built, you know, like,
right.
It's the difference between you should be loyal to things that are of you. And the place that you had an accident of birth to be whelped is not really of you.
It's true. It's true. And here's the other thing is unless you're loyal to morals and ethics and first principles, then you're going to end up following the people you're loyal to, the state you're loyal to, the nation you're loyal to when it goes down the wrong path and makes mistakes. You're going to end up following a Hitler type figure and doing horrible things that you probably in your heart of hearts know are wrong, or at least you are able to block your cognitive dissonance long enough to obey your orders.
Or you'll end up trying to like vote defensively because the Democrats are destroying America, so the Republicans must be the answer. And then you vote in Matt Mead as governor of Wyoming because he promises you can keep your guns and he won't put through some nationalized education system. And then he does things that step towards taking guns. And then he does things, you know, he ran opposing Common Core and anything like it. And he just signed on with it. You know, he's putting the Obama administration written education system that rewrites the Constitution and just has tons of errors in it because they rushed it through because it sucks. Yeah. Matt Mead is behind that, man.
Well, I remember asking him because I also interviewed the lady who ran for, I guess, Secretary of Education for Wyoming. I'm not sure if that's what the office is called, but I interviewed her a lot and she was running on the Republican platform. And, sort of, I don't know if she was friends with Matt Mead at the time, but once the election was over and the Republicans swept and she was in office, and she had always complained about federal involvement, and so did Matt Mead. I asked Matt Mead, you know, at the press conference after the win about that, about No Child Left Behind and federal involvement in Wyoming's education. And he sort of blew me off. You know, he looked at me and he gave me this sense of, hey, it's not that game anymore, man. I don't have to talk the libertarian talk anymore. I won. Yeah. You know, it's going to be how his old federal attorney self took back over and started giving the speech rather than his running for Republican.
He morphed.
Blurp.
Yeah.
In front of your eyes.
Exactly. And the thing that's interesting, though, about American patriotism is a lot of people try to make it about ideas, and they try to point to things like the Constitution or things that Thomas Jefferson wrote. But I don't think they enough separate the ideas from the men. I think there's too much great man worship when it comes to the founding fathers. And I think there's not a sense that there can still be progress in the ideas of liberty. I think a lot of people think that history ended at the Constitution, and that's the end-all be-all for what freedom means. And why would you do that? It was written 200-some years ago, and there's so much more of an opportunity to exchange ideas freely from all across the globe. Do you mean to tell me that you're so loyal to some 200-something-year-old piece of paper that you can't progress and think that there could be ideas out there that might make humanity more free?
Like Bitcoin. Hey, man.
Like Bitcoin. You know,
I mean, we're not rich from Bitcoin. We don't have nearly enough. We have about $600 worth, and which is less than one Bitcoin. But I'll say this. Another cryptocurrency, Litecoin, you know, we spent $100 last week. It's worth $300 this week. Like, we tripled our money in a week. That you can't do that in investments. And that's what liberty does, man. That's something that's just totally outside the system. And I'm not saying go out and invest in it. It's not investment advice. But, you know, tripling your money in a week with an investment, that's like cocaine deal investment return.
You know? There you go. Yeah. Yeah. But I guess the
and
other thing
legal.
For
it's legal.
And I guess my further critique of American patriotism, too, is your smarter people will try to point to the Constitution to be loyal to that or pretend that they're loyal to the ideas in it and not be able to progress. But the dumbest of them don't even go that far. They're loyal to a pattern of colors on fabric, and that's about where it ends. And if somebody waves that fabric with certain colors on it, then they'll rally around it and do whatever the waver of it says.
And they co-opt everything with that kind of patriotism. Like, you know, you can't go to a football game without having a pro-America rally and a pro-military rally. You can't have Thanksgiving. DJ went to the doctor the other day for a regular checkup and was like chatting with the ladies there. And, you know, they're like, so what are you doing for Thanksgiving? And she's like, oh, I don't know. I got, you know, a little bit of turkey and my husband and I are going to stay home and have a pleasant, quiet day. And their jaws just dropped. They were all like, what? You're not having 20 family members over and cooking all day and you haven't started thawing your turkey yet, your whole turkey? She might as well have said, I'm a card-carrying communist. I mean, they were almost judging her. They were so shocked. Right. They were just like, oh, you poor woman. You don't have family. And DJ and I are like, we don't have family coming. It's so nice, you know.
Right.
But they come up
because to them, it's all about the symbols. It has nothing to do with the substance or the ideas or the love that you and DJ are going to feel for each other that day and the fun you're going to have doing what you want to do.
Great day, exactly. Yeah.
So exactly, but because it doesn't coincide with the symbols that other people associate with a good Thanksgiving, and that's the same thing as loyalty. Is it symbolism? It's idolatry, as Ben Stone might say.
Yes, and now your federal family is hijacking that. I'm looking at this USA Today article. It's all ho, ho, ho till Obama hijacks your holiday. Why don't you read some of this?
Yeah.
And Obama then I'll send you the website where they where they tell you how to talk to your family at the holidays about Obamacare.
All right. And I've seen leakage of this on the Twitter sphere, but I've never actually clicked on one of the links. It looks like this is an opinion piece, but it's in USA Today, so it's mainstream enough to be in that.
Who probably have, you know, a 20-page spread on the wonders of Thanksgiving and family, too. I mean, they're kind they're kind of a weird centrist Republican, like, I don't even know what their politics are. I think they're now kind of Democrat and used to be kind of Republican, but they're really pro-American. You know, my friend used to, my friend's dad used to write for this. My friend Mike Martsky, little Mike, his dad, Rudy Martsky, used to write a sports column, but he didn't review sports. He reviewed people reviewing sports. He was like a reviewer of sportscaster. And the guy had like so much power in the industry. Like Mike said a couple times, you know, they went to the Super Bowl and it was like brought there in a limo, you know, backstage everything. Like people treated him like he was one of the coaches or something. Like he could ruin someone's career with a sentence.
So they better keep him happy.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll continue on
this. I met the guy, too, and he was we went to a Chinese restaurant in San Francisco, and he was making, like, charged remarks about being in a Chinese restaurant.
Really?
Yeah.
Like what? Could you do that back then? Was that okay?
Doing it kind of. Yeah.
Anyway.
Here's the really funny thing, though. I was dating this girl in D.C. when I quit my band Bomb for a while before we reunited, when I went to D.C. and lived there in the summer of crack when the mayor got arrested for crack. She was a painter, and I told her about this guy. You know, like, we found a copy of USA Today in the hallway of the building or something, and I showed her the picture of him. We were on – this is back when I did – and we came up with this idea to paint – she's a stunning painter. Like, she owns a gallery in New Orleans. She's famous. She paints, you know, makes a lot of money with her paintings. She's really good. She painted a portrait of this guy's dad from his picture in USA Today, and then painted a bunch of balls flying past his head at you. And it was like 5 feet by 5 feet.
Wow.
And, you know, he lived in the area. He lived in Reston, Virginia, which is a CIA place where everyone but him that works there works for the CIA, and his office was at the USA Today building in Arlington, right over the Key Bridge from DC. So she painted this thing, and on the back of it, she painted, "Dear Dad, I painted this for you. Love, Mike." And on Father's Day, I took a taxi up there and delivered it, pretended to be a messenger, just took a clipboard, put on a hat, looked like a messenger, and delivered it to the front desk at USA Today. And then we just forgot about it. And, like, I talked to Mike a few months later, and I just said something like, "Hey, did you do anything nice for your dad lately?" And he's like, "No, but he got this really fucking weird painting that he thought was for me. I don't know what it was about." And I started laughing. That was, like, the most elaborate prank I've ever done. And there was, like, no harm in it. You know,
No point to it. I mean, that's the kind of prank you think up when you're tripping on acid.
Yeah, but he actually, like, framed the painting and, like, found out it wasn't Mike, but just liked it and framed it and put it in his garage. Not his office, but in his garage.
Okay. Yeah. Was it hanging up in his garage? Yeah. Like, was it a man cave piece, or was it?
Yeah. That's what Mike said. Next time he went home, it was hanging in the man cave garage.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's something. So you want me to read this thing about Obama hijacking your holiday? Yeah. All right. It's from Katrina Trinko. That's a cool name. All right. "Loathe peaceful holidays? Detest the spirit of agreeableness and goodwill that tends to pervade during this time of year? Well, if you're longing for it to be 'tis the season of debates, irritations, and shouting matches, you're in luck. The Obama administration thinks the holidays are perfect time to gather around and discuss Obamacare. Wary about the effect bringing up the most polarizing political topic among your relatives and friends who likely span the blue, purple, red spectrum." Wait, there's a purple? I guess that's centrist. Are centrist purples? I guess we can't
call them
that.
It's undecided, I think. Or both at the same table.
Yes. Well, don't be wary, because President Barack Obama's Organizing for Action has launched a website with helpful tips about how to have the talk. That's in quotes. Is that actually the language they use?
Yeah, the website says it's time to have the talk at the top of the page.
Oh my god, that's disgusting. Yeah, the talk for how the government's going to screw you. All right, here's my first tip. If any adolescents or preteens are present, you might want to use a different phrase than the talk,
like,
when broaching the subject.
It's hip and jiggy, y'all. to be down with Obamacare, yo.
Yes, Obamacare.
That's how a parent, that's how an adult is going to sound talking to a teenager about Obamacare.
Oh, man. Okay, so here's what I don't understand. What are the talking points now? I mean, what benefits do proponents of Obamacare try to tell people it will bring?
Yeah, because it's pretty much proven.
I don't know.
That it's like impossible to get on. It's going to 5 million people have lost their health insurance. As many as 80 million may, which is more than the 30 million they said needed Obamacare because they were uninsured. And it's going to like everyone's healthcare price is going to go up, and kids are going to have to buy healthcare. And you know, basically, like most kids are for it because they're like going to get some help from the government for it. But if you're like 21 and you own your own business, it's going to screw you. You know, if you have some money, you're going to get screwed.
Yeah. Hey, not only is this about talking them into thinking it's a good idea, this is actually a website convincing you to prepare to sign them up for Obamacare. Step one is
get them drunk. Step two, log them on.
No,
fill them
no.
full of turkey.
Step one is send them a packing list and make sure they have their social security number, information about their employer, including their W-2 tax form, their budget, their existing insurance information, their current cost. You're going to ask them to come with all of their tax information and their identity information and their check stubs for Thanksgiving. Is that really
it's like Thanksgiving
really going to fly
with, you know, it's turning grandma into Big Brother. That's what this is.
That's awful.
Here's
who would think that'd be a good idea?
Here's my thought on it. Here's my experience with Thanksgiving and what happens. Fortunately, I never had, like, my family has a lot of dysfunction in it, but none of it is violent dysfunction and none of it's alcoholic dysfunction. It's more like my mother used to say she was the only Protestant Jewish mother in the world. Like, she was really into guilting people, and it kind of permeated my whole family to where, like, my siblings try that on me, and I just I don't talk to them. But I will say this: even though I don't talk to my family much, I have more devotion to my family than I have to any aspect of America, the Constitution, the Patriots, the turkeys.
Well,
you know?
Good.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people who say their family values, folks, are ready and willing to convince their sons to sign up to die for Israel,
yeah,
as you said earlier.
Yeah. So here's my experience with Thanksgiving. About the year 2000, somewhere around there, I was I injured myself preparing holiday turkey at someone's house. I was over at some friend's house. I was not drinking. It was after I got sober, but I cut myself kind of not real bad, but I was slicing something and I cut my hand, and I went to the emergency room and they took care of it. I was out of there in 3 or 4 hours. And, but when I got to the emergency room, I took a bus, like wrapped my hand with a shirt and, you know, like blood coming, like blood soaked white t-shirt on the bus in San Francisco. Go to the hospital, get there, walk in. I'm the only person in the ER waiting room. I'm like, what's going on? And I filled out my papers. They saw me like immediately. They stitched me up. They took care of it and sent me on my way. And I was talking to the doctor who stitched me up. And I was like, what's going on, man? There's nobody here. I've never been to a hospital ER and it's empty. And he said, oh, it's like this every Thanksgiving. It's completely empty until 5 or 6 o'clock, and then we are inundated with drunk people with blunt force head trauma.
Huh? Wow.
You know, because families get together, people that
That's
shouldn't
awful.
Get together and start drinking. You know, the people that get together once a year that shouldn't be together anyway start drinking and probably start talking about politics. So I'm wondering, is Obamacare going to cover it when, you know, you're adamantly pro or against Obamacare at the dinner table and some relative who's the opposite on that end hits you over the head with an empty wine bottle? Is Obamacare going to cover that tomorrow?
I sure hope so, because this site, which is it's a slash after BarackObama.com, so he can't not own this.
Yeah.
And it says to be persistent, right? If people are giving you flack, it goes, ask them to make a plan and commit to it. Quote, when do you plan on signing up? And then don't forget to follow up. Quote, have you signed up yet? It's asking people to badger their family into going and filling out tax forms, basically.
Yeah, yeah. How sociopathic is it that this Obamacare website is BarackObama.com? The first page of that is about healthcare. Like, he's owning – no, it's about other things, but – you know, organizing for action. That's weird, because it's like Obama actually has a pack. which is, I don't even know if that's legal, but this is, I think this came out of the
PAC. I think people can set up PACs and use them in your name, right? Yeah. I mean, they can name the PAC whatever they want to name it.
Yeah. Although I'll bet if I tried to set up a PAC that was anti-Obama and had to be BarackObama.org, I think I would get in trouble. This is him, man. Mm. This has got to be him. I'll bet the webmaster for this works in the same room as the webmaster for the White House or the webmaster team.
Or the webmaster that created the healthcare exchange website.
The 22 companies. Yeah. You know, one of those companies, the company that headed all that actually took care of the web database for Canada's gun registry site. And Canada has a really low compliance rate with that too. Maybe it's because they couldn't get on to register, or the police that were registering the guns couldn't get on and just wrote it on a post-it to do later. And then it got buried under, elk jam calls.
Is the website the only place you can do these healthcare exchanges?
No, are there other places? No, you can do it through your state, whatever. But I mean, the whole thing is specious because, first of all, they're conflating healthcare with health insurance. They're not the same thing.
Right.
They're making you think that, like, if, you know, you need healthcare, of course everyone needs healthcare, that means having insurance. And now they've co-opted it to where that means having Obamacare health insurance. And, I mean, you can go to your insurance agent and get healthcare that is Obamacare compliant without ever going to the government website.
It's just such an awful thing to me that something that's so important to literally the continued function of people's lives and their bodies.
Of the human race.
Yeah, is now firmly, I guess it's always been to some extent or to a lesser or greater extent under the thumb of government regulators, but so much more so now. I mean, literally, it's like doing anything is like dealing with the Texas toll roads or the DMV. It's just the biggest headache in the world.
Look at this link, man.
Who wants this?
Look at this link I just sent you on the front page of this site. It's got like, it looks like Christmas ornaments hanging, and one's a wreath, and one's a Christmas tree, and one's a snowflake, and one's a Band-Aid, and one's a turkey leg, and one's a bunch of pills. You looking at this?
No, when I went to it, it just says Obamacare. No,
look at the one I sent you to.
That's it. Oh. Yeah, it redirected me or something.
Maybe it can read thoughts and sends you like what you you'll want, not what I want. But it has pills.
Well, now,
I like the idea of like Christmas ornaments that are pills, which is basically saying, I'm making drug jokes, you know, like getting high drug jokes. But it's basically saying that the federal government has replaced Santa. And if you need life-saving medication, maybe Santa Obama will give it to you as a present.
If you're a good little boy and didn't piss off any of your federal family this year.
Yeah, I wonder how that's going to work. Like, you know, I don't know if there's really going to be death panels per se, but there are going to be people who decide who gets what. And I wonder if they will. I'm not even wondering. I think they'll take it into account if you are the guy known in town is screeching at everybody, you know, at the government.
Yeah. Well, the more the government controls a sector of the economy, the more likely it is you'll have rationing. And at something the level of Obamacare, there's going to have to be some level of rationing. And whether that's people deciding if your granny lives or not, that's just one aspect of it. It's not an argument about degrees right now. It's an argument about kind. And it's the kind of thing where they get to decide what you get and what you don't. Or at least they get to decide what the company structure is of companies that are going to be providing you with this kind of thing.
Yeah, I want to get off this. We're past our time here, but I want to have a little puppy parade. And the only thing I can find is, of course, presidents lie, which is an article on CNN. It's like, it's actually an article called "Of Course Presidents Lie." And it's basically saying, hey man, they're top men. They have to lie to you once in a while.
They're not even trying anymore
to say, oh, Obama's not lying. They don't lie. But it's a list of like lies told by a bunch of Democrats and Republicans throughout the ages. And they're lying in this because they're whitewashing, no pun intended, the Lincoln saying horrible things about black people, you know, that is brought out from time to time to say, you know, he just fought the war of Northern aggression as a political and economic crushing of the South, not to really free the slaves. And it's true, he didn't like black people, but they're basically saying that when he said, I don't ever want to see a black man be able to vote, or whatever the phrasing of it was, that he was lying, and he was saying that to appease people in top men in the South.
Yeah. I don't think he was lying about that. I think he lied about a lot of things. Yeah, so this is horrible. When I first read the headline, I thought, oh, yeah, it's going to be ripping on how horrible presidents are. But no, it's, yeah, you're right. It's about, hey, it's okay when they lie to us because they're in the office of the presidency and we should respect it. They're like your daddy, and sometimes your daddy will tell you what's good for you.
Yeah.
That's awful. That's disgusting. And that's not the kind of daddy I'm going to be.
Yeah, you're going to be a let's have that be the puppy parade. You're going to be a daddy here really soon.
Daddy.
How many days till your due date? It's December 12th, well, a day that will live in infancy.
It's December 12th, but as of tomorrow, it will be a full term pregnancy. So the way that works is, I guess after the full 38 weeks, you're considered full term. And so if she goes into labor, they're not going to try to forehold it. And it's possible that she will. So pretty much any time from tomorrow till, I guess, near Christmas time, if she's still not out, they'll induce.
So if it's like Saturday morning, you're not going to say, hold it in till my show's over, baby. I hope you're going to tweet me like from the hospital saying like, okay, have DJ go on and fill in for me or something if that happens.
I guess we haven't discussed that. If I have to duck out during something like that, I guess DJ would
That would work, but I'd have to know. I mean, otherwise, I'm just going to be reading my user's manual for the human experience.
What happens if her water breaks during the middle of the show?
Then DJ can fill in, and then during a break, I'll call Ben Stone, and Ben will be like, I'm not set up right now, and then he'll feel really bad later. Like, when I told him to call in and chat for a minute the other day, and like, he wasn't set up, because I've talked to him, he's in the Carolinas, and he's in his mystery mobile, his Wormabago, and driving around the country solving mysteries with his wife, but yeah, he's not really set up yet to podcast, so... I wouldn't feel home in a mobile home unless I was like ready to podcast at a moment's notice, but that's me.
That's you. Yeah. I would be able to do the Ben Stone thing and just travel the world and have my gear in a suitcase at the very least.
Well, it sounds like Berlin might be the place to do that at some point, but I love Berlin. If I could expat anywhere in the world and not be messed with and still do this show, it would be Berlin. Or it'd be somewhere, it'd probably be Berlin or somewhere outside of it. I love Berlin, man. I really love
it. Mine would be Hawaii.
Yeah.
Definitely.
The thing about Berlin is there's a lot of anarchists there who would dig us, but they wouldn't dig the anarcho-capitalist part. They're almost to a man, except the one that I think invented Bitcoin that I think I've interviewed that I'm not going to say his name. Other than that, I think... I met so many leftist anarchists in Europe, man. They're everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we can discuss why they are the way they are at a later show. You ready to stick a pin in this one?
Yeah, stick a pin in it. It's done, turkeys.
Yeah, worms.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation.
Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to freedomfiends.com.